Ahoy, Mets fans. Welcome back to Amazing Avenue Audio, the show. My name is Brian. With me, as always, is Chris. And, Chris, we have a little bit of news in Metsville. It's been a quiet time since the lockout started for obvious reasons. But there's a couple of things to talk about today. The biggest of which, I guess, is the retirement of number 17, famously worn by Keith Hernandez. And this is, you know, something the Mets have been reluctant to do. You know, up until just a couple years ago, the only players with retired numbers were the two folks who went into the Hall of Fame as Mets, Tom Seaver and Mike Piazza, as well as two other managers, Casey Stengel and Gil Hodges, as well as the number 42, which is retired across all of baseball for Jackie Robinson. But the Mets have been very reluctant to honor their former players in this way. We just had Jerry Kuzman's retirement ceremony last summer, which was delayed a year because of the pandemic. And now we have Keith Hernandez's number being retired. I think if there's anyone in Mets history who you could look at and say that guy deserves to have his number retired based on his contributions to the Mets for his playing career and beyond, I think Keith is the obvious choice. Do you agree with that, or is there someone you would rather have seen have their number retired first?
I think it's the perfect choice for opening it up a little bit more, and it's not lowering the bar at all, really. You know, it was such a high bar that they had for so long. And I think it contributed to something that, I don't know, it wasn't something that bugged me quite as much, but that sense of the Wilpons not having appreciation for their own team's history, the fact that they handled things the way they did. So yeah, I think Keith is really the perfect one to kind of open up this whole new world of Mets number retirements. And obviously I don't think they should retire all of them, but somebody who's dedicated a huge chunk of his life to the Mets, somebody who I think has still a case to make the Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe not a slam dunk candidate, but
I think Gil Hodges getting in is a really good example that Keith will eventually get in. I just hope that, unlike Gil Hodges, Keith is alive to see it.
Right.
Yeah. I'm sorry, you were saying, I interrupted you to say that.
No, that's okay. But I think it is the good way to do this, or the best way to do this, even. There are plenty of others, you know, when you obviously think of past players who have done more than just win a championship with the Mets and be an important part of it. Ron Darling comes to mind as well. But I think that combination of what Keith did in a Mets uniform on the field and what he's done as a broadcaster should contribute to that. And I think the broadcasting part of it really is significant. Yes. Ralph Kiner didn't play for the Mets, but is one of the most beloved Mets in franchise history in my mind.
Right.
Because of what he did on TV.
When you think about it, for Mets fans of our generation, I don't even know when Keith started broadcasting for the Mets. It was early 2000s, though. It was before SNY.
Right.
So we've probably spent more time listening to Keith than we've spent watching almost any player in Mets in our Mets fandom.
Yeah.
And so he is as integral a part of my Mets fandom, my Mets viewership over the past 20 years as anybody is, really, you know. And to me, the difference between Keith and Ron, however, is that while Ron was a very good pitcher, Keith was a great player. So I understand, I think Ron is the better broadcaster than Keith is. So this is not about weighing the broadcasting differently. I just think that Keith was a borderline retire the number guy anyway, and then you throw the broadcast career on top of that. I don't know if Ron gets there for me in terms of just playing, but I think in terms of playing and announcing, it doesn't hurt to retire Ron's number either.
Right.
we're nowhere near Yankee or Cardinal territory where like they're running out of numbers to give people because they've retired too many numbers.
Yeah, no, no, not at all. Obviously, I think David Wright will join the ranks at some point.
I think Gary Carter will.
Yeah.
Especially because Gary Carter was almost a coin flip on which team he'd go in the Hall as. Like, there's a case to be made he should have gone in as a Met. So I feel like that, if you're going to do that for, you know, if because Piazza had a coin flip also, but if Piazza went in as a Dodger, the Wilpons would not have retired his number under the old regime. So, you know, I think that Gary Carter should be right up there. What do you think about Doc and Darryl?
I mean, I always go back to it when I explain how I became a Mets fan. First game I went to in 1989 as a kid, first major league game, Darryl hit a home run, the apple went up, Doc Gooden was the starting pitcher that night, the Mets beat the Dodgers. So strictly from the roots of my fandom, which I think I'm grateful for. As long as we're still approaching the team as something that we enjoy, then my personal roots with it are those guys. And, you know, they're right there. There'd be something cool about having 16, 17, 18 retired right next to each other.
That's true.
I do think even if they do that, there's a lot of pretty good numbers still available for players to use. Yeah. If we assume 5 isn't going to be used again.
8 won't be used again probably with Carter.
Right. But there's enough there that, I mean, even the Yankees, with as many as they have retired, they don't trot out guys with ridiculous uniform numbers all that often.
Right.
It would be funny to get to a point that the Mets had like a bunch of pitchers, like their best pitcher is wearing like 74 or something. you know, some like hockey and football numbers in there in the 70s and 80s. But yeah, I lost my train of thought.
No, I mean,
I'd say do it. I know it didn't end well with the two of them. Mm-hmm. And I know that they also played for the Yankees and all that, but I would just lean toward doing it.
I think that you have to celebrate your wins in anything you do in life, right? Like, you have to be positive about these things. And if you're a Mets fan, there are certain players that are undeniably part of our history. And I think Kuzman was long overdue. Long overdue. I think Keith and Kidd are long overdue. You know, I think David Wright is probably, we've talked about this before, I think David Wright's probably the only guy of that era to get his number retired because of Jose Reyes' domestic violence charge, or else I think they would have retired Reyes' also. Even though Reyes did not have the career that David Wright had, I think those two represent a certain period of Mets history. Just, you can't think of one without the other. And so I think that you would probably have Reyes along with him if there wasn't that black cloud hanging over him. And then I think, you know, unless things go really wrong in the next few years, I think DeGrom gets his number retired too. Eventually.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's one that wouldn't be in super high demand.
No, it's lucky.
So it's an easy one to do.
Yeah. I think we talked about this before too, how we feel like there's maybe room for one more late 90s, early 2000s Met to get the number retired, just because, you know, there's only really 3 or 4 eras in Mets history worth celebrating, and that's one of them. But I don't know who the other guy is from that era. John Franco, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, he certainly had the longevity, and I think, you know, in fairness to him, he's probably better than my reaction just now.
Well, you know, we also, when we became like really, really intense fans, he was already on the downside of his career.
Yeah. Like, I mean, 99, he was very good, and the Mets were very good. You know, even 2000, he was still solid. So I don't know. Maybe I should look back on that a little more fondly than I do.
I wonder if it's going to become a, like, if you're a captain, you get your number retired. There have only been four captains in Mets history. Right? Four? Keith, sure. Gary, Franco,
and David Wright.
And David Wright, yeah, that's it. So, yeah. Maybe that's the way they go for it from now on. Regardless, though, let's any other, like, I guess one more question about the retirement ceremony. Do you think that this is going to be, is this the most significant, is this more significant of a ceremony than Piazza's? Now, I feel like Piazza's in the Hall of Fame, greatest hitting catcher of all time, but does this mean more to Mets fans because of how long this took? I mean, Seaver's is going to be more significant. I shouldn't have said most of all time, but
right.
Beyond,
yeah.
Seaver, is this sort of the, like, or Kuz been waiting so long? Like, I don't know. I feel like this is, because Keith's not in the Hall of Fame and maybe should be, this just feels very significant to me.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it matches the level of Piazza, but he's definitely a bigger personality. You know,
yes.
Piazza, it's not that he's not been around at all, but he has not been like in the front of everybody's mind all the time for the last few years. So that's not to diminish things at all. His arrival and time with the Mets was a transformational experience. But I guess the bigger deal, maybe the higher demand for tickets for the game and all that was probably Piazza. But I feel like that day celebrating Keith might be more fun.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, the whole ballpark is probably going to be full of people with, Seinfeld references from his time on the show.
you can find now at AmazingAvenue.com an I'm Keith Hernandez t-shirt from our friends at Breaking Tea, so check that out.
Yeah, that is true. But
I'll say it right now, Chris. I'll do it if you'll do it. If we go to that, should we shave our beards and just have mustaches for that day?
I don't know if I can get permission for that. I thought about it. I was like, well, what if I dyed my beard a color like temporarily bleached the rest of it. It would look terrible, but like went mustache only, you know, just for that day.
Yeah.
One thing's for sure. Keith must maintain his mustache for that day.
Oh, of course.
None of this,
Ted what Berg was it? Like bullshit.
Right. The Ted Berg era. We're just going to blame Ted for this one.
Yeah.
Of mustacheless Keith. But yeah, I'm picturing that, like, over the last few months, I've watched quite a bit of European soccer, something that's a very new experience for me, but just watching people have like a fun time at games there.
Watching people enjoy themselves during sporting events.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, it's not to say that they always go home happy with the result of the game, but it's just, there's a lot going on, and for Keith, there should be real or fake mustaches everywhere. People should be like bringing boxes of Just for Men,
throw them on the field like a hat trick.
Yes. Yeah. and the Mets should try to lean into call up Seinfeld and see if you know. Like, there's no reason that we shouldn't have a nice game, pretty boy, like, during the ceremony.
Right.
That to me is where you can distinguish yourselves. And look, I know I'm not exactly talking about reaching a much younger audience here, but we know the Mets, publicly announced that they're doing various things. You know, they're looking at, between innings entertainment options and ways to tie things in and draw people into the sport and the team and all that stuff. And they're going to have a bunch of very bright banner screens all around the park. And they're claiming it'll be the most technologically advanced ballpark in baseball and all that. And that's all good. Sure, do whatever. I think some of those things might annoy me in a couple of years, but like right now, I don't care. It's fine. But there's no downside to making that celebration of Keith fun. And that, to me, distinguishes your team identity from the Yankees. I mean, it's already different, but there's no reason that they should go into that day treating it like it's the most serious thing the Mets have ever done.
Right.
You know, if you're doing this, it should be a celebration of the person. So in that sense, I think it has the potential to be just a grand old time. Whereas Mike Piazza, as great as he was, is fairly boring. You know,
yeah.
Somebody at SNY should be compiling like all of Keith's greatest broadcasting moments. I think they should make it like a 2-hour montage of clips. Like, let everybody into the ballpark at noon. I'll start drinking at noon if you give me Keith stuff to watch all day.
Absolutely.
Before the game starts. I think it's like a 4:00 start as currently scheduled.
I believe so, yes. That's usually what they do for those special games too.
Yeah. But yeah, do it up. Go all out. You know, this is my pitch to the Mets. An extension of Steve Cohen initiating like the Bobby Bonilla experience, mm-hmm. to try to turn the deferred payment plan that he had on its head a little bit. But yeah, why not? I think Keith would be into it too. He takes certain things seriously, like things on the field during a game. That he'll get very upset about, but he does not seem like somebody who would, scoff at the opportunity to poke fun at himself while also accepting an honor that clearly means a lot to him.
So I'll put this out there right now for you. I know you're listening, Steve Cohen. Chris and I will be happy to be the pregame entertainment for that day. We will start at noon. We will be in charge of sort of interviewing some dignitaries that will be there. We will share our favorite Keith stories. We'll have Ted Berg on to talk about the time that he was there and Keith shaved his mustache. We will show the Seinfeld episode. We'll be your MCs for the day. We'll do that if we have to.
I'm down.
We'll sacrifice our Saturday to make that happen. So give us a call, Mets. But one of the things that Keith mentioned, which in classic Keith fashion, I don't know if he was supposed to mention this or not, but he said that the Mets are planning an old-timers game for 2022. And he mentioned there are going to be 50 players involved. I don't know how he would know that. But, you know, he's Keith Hernandez. But this is something the Yankees did for a long time, and the Mets used to do it, but haven't done it in quite some time. What do you think about the idea of an old-timers game?
I'm into it. I think it can be a fun experience, and I think it also can just be like, okay, we're doing this, so we don't have to hear people complain about it anymore.
Right.
I would love to see an old timers game where the oldest of the old timers are managing and coaching. And the younger old timers are maybe not so far removed and like actually playing a somewhat competitive game of baseball.
So you want to see David Wright and Michael Kadir go back to back off of, Jeremy Hefner in that game while Keith and Ron like manage the teams as opposed to seeing guys in their 70s try to hit the ball.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that would be the ideal way to do it.
I can be down with that. I think that could be kind of fun. I just think it's a fun idea. I think that the Mets need to embrace their fun because they share a city with the Yankees, who are not fun at all. And so embrace the fun. Have more fun with everything, and that's a good example of a way to have, you know, a little bit of fun. But speaking of coaching, it was a nice segue you did there, Chris, without even realizing it. The Mets have named three of their coaches for the next season. We know that the Mets have Jeremy Hefner they retained as their pitching coach, but they have added third base coach Joey Cora, first base coach Wayne Kirby, and hitting coach Eric Chavez as their as the coaches they've announced so far. We are still waiting to hear who will be the bench coach, and a lot of these teams usually have an assistant hitting coach, an assistant pitching coach. I don't know if the Mets retained Ricky Bonus as their bullpen coach or not. I don't remember that. Do you remember that off the top of your head?
That's a good question. I mean, I thought it was specifically only Hefner.
Right.
Was retained. But Ricky Bonus has had multiple stints as the bullpen coach for the Mets.
Yes, he has.
So I would not be surprised if he returns. Yeah. So I'm not sure, but I believe he was not retained, at least in the short term.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What do you have any strong feelings about any of these players, any of these coaches rather?
Not really. No. I mean, I can't claim to have followed the details of their work in their previous roles. I guess Eric Chavez, I remember him being a pretty good hitter for a while there.
Yes.
Wasn't that long ago either. So, okay, sure.
Not a terribly selective hitter, if I remember correctly.
Let's see.
I always think of hitting coaches as those guys with great eyes, but maybe that's just my... my bias is what I want in a hitting coach coming out.
Yeah, I mean, his walk rates were solid.
Not, okay, I guess.
You know,
this is just going off my memory of watching games, so.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, for a while there, in his prime, he was a very solidly above league average hitter and all that. And, you know, hopefully that translates into... It doesn't necessarily mean it will, but hopefully it translates into being able to teach or work with or adapt or adjust or any and all of those things with the hitters that the Mets have. Because really last year, the offense underperformed. There's no real way to put it other than that. Like, I think any coach could walk in and some of these guys could rebound. And as a collective unit, especially with some of the additions they made that feel like they happened 20 years ago.
Right, yes.
And happened, in reality, were less than a month ago.
No, right? That happened. No,
they no, that was around Thanksgiving.
Yes, it was okay, Black Friday. Sorry. They did a bunch of Black Friday shopping.
Yes. Okay. All right.
Like,
well,
still 6 weeks ago. I mean, that's not all that crazy.
Right. Yeah, no, it's not ancient history.
Yeah.
But it feels like it is.
It does, yes.
So, yeah, the combination of the new faces. We know one rumor. There's been so little about the current players and what the team might be doing because they can't do anything during the lockout. So, but there was one rumor that the Mets were considering or are considering trading Jeff McNeil when things are back in action, but that's really been it. If they do keep McNeil, I think he's a pretty damn good candidate to bounce back. All of which is to say that Eric Chavez could look like a genius of a hitting coach without really having to do too much, and that's fine.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't have any strong thoughts on any of these folks. You know, if it makes Buck Showalter feel better to have his folks around him, I'm all for that. But I really don't have any strong thoughts on any of these guys just yet. We'll see, as always. And then the last bit of news is, as of recording, the meeting between the MLBPA and Major League Baseball just ended. And so there was no new deal struck to put an end to this lockout. But there wasn't expected to be one. You had a quote. You had a tweet pulled up before, didn't you, about this? Do you still have that pulled up?
Did I?
Yeah, it was from Jeff Passan, I believe.
Oh, yeah. Hold on. It's there somewhere. I can paraphrase it without...
It basically said, no one expected there to be a deal. There won't be a deal. Spring training is now maybe in question to start on time.
Yeah. That sums it up nicely.
I had predicted it would be over by now because I'm a fool, apparently. I had just thought that they would have looked at the 94 lockout and how bad that was. You know, they would not want to impact any of that, nor lose any money. And we all know, you know, spring training doesn't bring in a ton of money, but it's a money making proposition for the team. And so you would just think that baseball would be interested in getting that stuff all happening without losing too much money. And it appears that's not going to happen just yet. Hopefully, it won't be too long from now. What is your guess right now on what you think the lockout end date will be? Do you have any strong feelings about this?
I will guess. Let's see. February for sure. I'm not going to guess it's going to end in January. Let's go with February 17th. Why not?
17th. Okay.
Throw 17 in there for Keith.
Okay, I like that.
But yeah, I think we will still officially be in lockout mode when spring training was supposed to have started.
I'm going to say February 8th. What could do for Gary Carter? Just because I think spring training will start late, but I think if you start as late as what you just said, that might push that might put opening day in danger. And I don't think anybody wants to do that. So I'm going to say a little bit before you say that. That way, you can technically start spring training on time, even though there'll be a ton of free agents and whatever, you know?
Yeah, no, it'd be somewhat of a bonanza if either of us are right.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think it would be a crazy thing to... It's going to be crazy if there's like 2 weeks between, or a week or two between the start of spring training and the end of the lockout, and just seeing 400 free agents sign like in short order, and a bunch of trades being made and all that. But that just seems like it's... doesn't that seem like the most likely scenario? There's going to be this feeding frenzy at the end? Or do you see a bunch of players not sign until the last week of spring training?
No, I think it'll be sort of like exactly that pre-lockout frenzy.
Mm-hmm.
There's been so much uncertainty in the world over the last 2 years, from the short season of 2020 to trying to get back to something that looked more normal for baseball in 2021. And then everyone knew that something was going to happen this winter. And it was enforced by the owners, so it came in the form of a lockout. But I think players and teams, once they resolve this, are going to want to just get to it. And I don't think players are going to want to wait until the last week of spring training. I think some of the guys who signed before the lockout wanted to have that peace of mind so that they knew where they would be going when things changed.
Yes.
So not to say that I think every player out there is going to take a terrible deal, but I do think that they will be trying to sign relatively quickly because, you know, we've seen lots of disruption, whether it was to smaller numbers of players in off seasons past because teams had waited and waited and waited and not signed guys as early, or some teams just aren't signing guys and aren't trying to win on an annual basis. I think they're going to have sort of an itch to just say, like, look, I want to know where I'm playing this year. And, you know, maybe beyond this year, we'll figure it out when we get there. There are some very big names left. So those guys you're talking about, much more money and all that. And look, maybe the Mets signed another huge player. Who knows?
Chris Bryant, come on down.
Yeah, he really would be the perfect fit. But yeah, it's my long answer of saying I think it'll go quickly.
Yeah, I think it will too. I think that there'll be a couple of players that will hold out. Possibly even somebody like a Michael Conforto, a Boris client, you know, might hold off a little bit longer. But I think ultimately, like you said, people are re-signing sort of 1-year deals, maybe just to play this year and then reevaluate everything else. So we'll see how all that goes. But regardless of that, Chris, do you have a music pick ready for us?
Yeah, I am going to go with, and I'm not sure if it's available digitally at all. It might be. So if it's not, then you're just gonna have to buy the record like I did. but I know, you know, over the last 2 years, there have been a variety of live records coming out of Levitation, which is a festival I have not attended in person myself. But it's a festival and a label, and it's like its whole own little music universe. So this release, it's been a while since I've recommended a record by King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard. But there's a Live at Levitation vinyl came out. Mine showed up sometime last week or the week before, and four versions of it. They're on like really nice different, you know, if you're into multicolored vinyl, that only adds to the experience.
Is this from 2014 or 2016?
It's both. So it's a double LP.
Okay, they are available digitally on Bandcamp.
Ah, okay. Yes. Okay.
As individual records though.
Okay. But yeah, it's a double LP. One of which the 2014 show is from that festival. It was their first show in the United States. I believe they said their first show in North America. So that was a big moment for them. Playing a bunch of songs that wound up being recorded on the record I'm In Your Mind Fuzz, which they recorded in Brooklyn either later that year or early the following year. And then the 2016 show is heavy on songs from Not Gone Infinity, which to me is still their crowning achievement. So, you know, this is all music that I've probably recommended some of the songs on both of these records in the double LP in the past. But it's just it's a really good capture of what they sounded like and the songs they were playing at the time that I got into the band. I know this, but because of COVID, really, I have not seen them play live in quite a while. So having that show up and throwing it on the turntable and just feeling what those songs sounded like in a live context was really good. So yeah, if you are already into them, it's a good thing to go back to. And if you have ignored all of my previous recommendations, this is the stuff that I was hearing when I got hooked. So I can't think of a better starting point.
Yeah, that's I find it very satisfying when a band releases a live album and it just like kicks you in the chest, like, oh man, this is exactly what I want out of this live record right now. You know, especially right now when live music is still a luxury that not all of us are permitting ourselves, or at least not permitting ourselves as often as we maybe used to. It's really nice. Okay, so I am going to pick a really weird album this week. Not weird because of the contents, but weird because it's sort of what it is. So when I was in college, I had this weird student loan where I had $500 in my loan to buy books at the campus bookstore. And if you didn't use those $500, it didn't get refunded. It just went away. So my dad used to say to me, like, go to the bookstore, buy soda, buy whatever you want to, because that money is going to be wasted if you don't use it. So one year, I had like $8 left, and I was determined to spend it. I already bought a bunch of food and all that from the bookstore, and they had a copy of the British music magazine Mojo. I don't know why the fuck the bookstore had a copy of Mojo magazine, but it did, and it was like a $6 import magazine, so I bought it. And with it was a CD called Trojan Explosion, and it was like a mix of different reggae songs. And like there was a Bob Marley song on it, but it's like a really early Bob Marley and the Wailers song. It's not a, it wasn't like, you know, Three Little Birds or a song that I was familiar with at all. It was all very new. And a lot of the stuff, it's not quite like, there's a little bit of dub stuff, but a lot of it is just sort of like the early, like when ska was becoming reggae, that kind of period of time. And so the CD, it was a really weird CD physically because it had a, you know, CDs have like a shiny back to them. This had a black back to it, like a matte black back to it.
That's cool.
it is cool, but it meant that like your CD player and your computer wouldn't recognize it sometimes. Like it was very hard to listen to. So I listened to it a bunch in college and liked it. And then just whatever reason, I guess because I couldn't rip it onto a computer or I couldn't for an iPod or whatever. It just kind of has sat in a CD book in my house for the last 20 years. And the other day, I just happened to think of this, and I went on Spotify, and somebody had created a playlist with all those songs on it. And so I can now listen to this playlist again. Now, I am not the world's biggest reggae fan. I think that a lot of reggae, especially like reggae that isn't dub reggae or reggae that isn't like early reggae, to me, I definitely can hear how people can say a lot of it sounds the same. It's not my favorite genre of music, but a good, well-curated reggae compilation, like Johnny Greenwood from Radiohead organized a reggae compilation maybe 15 years ago called Dread is the Controller. Maybe that's one of the songs on it. It was called Johnny Greenwood is the Controller. Whatever. That was excellent, too. Like, I just think that I need someone to curate my reggae for me because I'm not smart enough to do a good job of it myself. But so I will link to this playlist, Spotify playlist. There's a lot of really cool stuff in here, and it's a genre I wish I knew more about. So this is giving me a couple of artists to go forward and check out some more. And I listened to it the other day while I was shoveling snow, which is like the most strange juxtaposition of activity and music. It's not snow music at all, but it was really pleasant, and I really enjoyed it. So it's called Trojan Explosion, and I'll link to the Spotify playlist in our show notes. Are you a reggae guy at all?
A little bit. I dabble. I do have a quick story that not burning a recommendation here, but at Desert Days in the fall, there was an artist named Patchy Man, and okay. He's I believe he's Puerto Rican and like makes reggae, but when he came out and performed on stage, it's just him, and he's got like a bunch of equipment to like play loops and like do effects on him and all that. And it's all reggae stuff, but he's just up there, just one guy and his equipment doing it, like, and it sounds cool, but it's kind of like, all right, you know, whatever. And then at near the very end of his set, he's like, by the way, I recorded all this stuff by myself, and this is like my music that I'm mixing. And I'm like, I wish you told us that in the beginning. Because I thought it was like, all right, this is cool. It's the afternoon, you know, like it's enjoyable. Not that like, but it was less impressive to me because I thought he was just doing like remixes of other people's recordings. And then at the very end, he's like, oh, by the way, I recorded all these parts myself. And then I'm like, okay, well, now I'm impressed. But I could have been impressed for the entire set. That's my recent reggae story.
Well, we hope that you guys enjoy our music selections and the show. And we hope you go to AmazingAvenue.com where we are struggling but still getting lots of good Mets news and content from us every day, good podcasts, and hopefully there'll be more fun news to share soon. when this lockout ends. So go to AmazingAvenue.com for all of that, please. Also, find Amazing Avenue on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Amazing Avenue. You can find this show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Amazon Music. You can find us lots of places. Wherever you find us, though, rate, review, and subscribe so that we can get the show out to more people and so more people can hear about it and hopefully enjoy it. And breaking news, Mets have re-signed Steven Nogosek to a minor league deal. Just popped up right now. So if you care about that sort of thing, congratulations. Chris is on Twitter at Chris McShane. I am on Twitter at Brian Needs a Nap. And until next time, let's go Mets.